And I've talked to B of A, the urban executive, you know, and I've talked to the Continental executive, who is the head of the Continent Maintenance Company.
So who do they have doing their maintenance, do you know?
Well, they have a Caucasian man who does the maintenance, and he does a lousy job, and B of A, Weber Wong tells me they're terrible.
What reasons have B of A given you for...
I really feel, well, this is the way I feel, and this is the way I've told them. I said, you see fit to bring your B of A into Chinatown to take Chinese money, but you don't see fit for me as a Chinese maintenance to do the maintenance in your building. I said, you know, the economy works around like this. You hire me as the maintenance man to do your maintenance. I in turn hire a Chinese worker, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the money circulate within the community, and it goes back into your bank.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the way economy runs, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why can't you give me the job? It's as simple as that. All you need to do is say, hey, this is yours. I see your point. I'm sure you do it for the blacks, because otherwise you wouldn't be able to exist in the black area. But yet, because of the fact that we're Asian, and we have very small voice in here, and we don't, you know, the wheel that squeaked the most gets the oil.
Mm.
But I think partly of that, I really think it's George Wu's fault, the manager. Because I really feel that if he really wants to help, he could very well go to his chairman of the board and say, look, this maintenance company wants to do the maintenance in our Chinatown building. And I really feel that it's, that if you say a word to your Continental Maintenance Company and say, release this building for the Chinese community, let them do it there for the, you know, you probably could swing it.
How many years has this fight been more
six
or less
years
ongoing?
Since I opened up the business 6 years ago. I still haven't got it yet. I'm tired of fighting bureaucracy.
Do you think it has to do with
that?
Do you think it has to do with price at all? The fact that perhaps
no.
You got the Caucasian company
no.
for less? And
well, probably, you see, the way the Bank of America work is that they want you to bid on a block basis. And in other words, according to the Continental Maintenance Company, is that you have to bid 10 to 12 B of A at one time, you know. And I told them I wasn't interested in bidding 10 to 12 because I'm not that large. I said, I'm only interested in just one little building. And I don't think asking for one little building in a community where it's completely ethnic, is that hard to release. Only it's because of that they make it so hard themselves that they refuse to release it.
Mm-hmm.
That's another thorn in my side, because I do everybody else's here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it just only stands to reason that I have B of A.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now we come highly recommended.
Mm-hmm.
If I did a lousy job, I can understand that, hey, we don't want you. But we do five of Southern California Auto Club's building, and if they see fit to give us five of their biggest building, then I don't think that we're doing such a bum job, right?
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, they wouldn't award us that contract.
Mm-hmm.
Evidently, we do a decent job of it. So I'm still mad.
So you went from OPA to sales work. How long did you stay in sales?
Oh, I think I was in sales for about 3 years. When I got married, I left.
When did you get married?
I was married in 1945.
What did you do after you got married?
Oh, well, we left, my husband and I left for New Mexico where he was stationed.
What does your husband do?
He was in the service in the Air Force.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What's his name?
Bill.
Mm-hmm.
His parents been here a long time too.
Mm-hmm. So he was in... You were stationed in New Mexico for how many years?
He was stationed there for about a year and a half, but we lived there for about 3 months before he was discharged.
Mm-hmm.
And we came back and settled in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And
did you do anything while you were in New Mexico?
No.
Work? This is such a short time.
No.
Mm-hmm. So when did you come back to L.A.?
46.
46.
Mm-hmm. About, probably in February of 46.
Mm-hmm. And did you work in 46 when you came back?
Yes. After I came back to help family, and then I went to work for Chungking Produce for Wilbert Wu.
Mm-hmm.
And
what were you doing there?
I was clerk.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then after that, I think my daughter was born, and I left. I quit.
When was your daughter born?
She was born in 1948. We lived with my husband's family for about a year. And then we moved to an apartment, and that's where my daughter was born in 48. And after that, it was just a regular life of just being a housewife and working for the family here, and I think the interesting part of our lives was in this business here. Right after the war, this restaurant was never like this. It was just like a mom and papa restaurant in those days. And when the boys came back from the service, business was very poor, very bad. And they decided that they wanted to do something different. And they were very young. They had the energy and the age, youth. They decided to... have a new type of concept of dining. You know, Chinese people always have chop suey, you know, just eating. Well, the difference in this particular family is that each one of us contributes something to make it work. We have my oldest brother, who's Walter, who's quite artistic. And he conceived the concept of dining. And I have my brother David, who's the enterprising of all the brothers. And he's a very fine chef. Then, of course, the other two brothers are follower and who are, you know, willing to game to try, you know, loans. I was the other part of the fifth wheel who ties it all together.
Mm-hmm.
And we proceed to give Chinese food a distinctive name of dining rather than eating.
Mm-hmm.
very few Chinese ever thought of that. Because we wanted to give a little class to Chinese food. So the part was that, you see, we do our own cooking at that time. See, the boys did the cooking. Walt, Dave was a very fine chef. So Walter and I managed the upstairs, and the other three brothers are in the kitchen. So we decided that we'll go out and sell the dinner. So we have always been a noted restaurant in the city of Los Angeles. A lot of famous people who've been following us from old Chinatown to new Chinatown, such as the Chinese consulate, George Kilcore, George Barron, and because of the fact that my father has always imported his chef, that's the reason why our restaurant was so well known.
Imported from where?
From China.
From China.
Mm-hmm. So we decided to change. So when people come into our restaurant, and when we size them up, one would say, if they look like they're well-dressed, then I'll be the salesman to go out and sell them the dinner. See, because the dinner that we have that's called dining, mm-hmm. the gourmet, was not listed in the menu. Mm-hmm. So when I go out to the people, when they come in, you know, when they sit down, and I would sell the dinner, I said, would you like for me to order for you? And then you say, well, what would you order? I said, well, why don't this be a surprise? Mm-hmm. I said, you don't like it, you don't have to pay. Yeah, of course, that was a good selling point, right? So then I said, well, I'll mention a price, $2.50. Mm-hmm. And if you want the kitchen sink, I'll give it to you for $3. So that's the start of our gourmet house. And it went over very well. The food was excellent, you know. And then in come Paul Coates, who at that time was a food columnist for the Mirror.
How do you spell his last name?
Coats. He since has passed away. You know, he was a very famous columnist in Los Angeles. He was the restaurant columnist for the city of Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And we had since that, before we went into this dining concept, we remodeled the place. We didn't have too much money in those days. We only had $1,000. That's all the money we had. And there's a girl named Willa Kim. She's a dress designer. She designed dress costume for New York plays now. She's in New York. Mm-hmm. She was a family friend, an old friend. But before Willa came in the picture, there was another gentleman who I should really give a lot of credit to. And his name is Jimmy Lim. He's an architect with Victor Grumman. We told him we only got $1,000, Jimmy. What can you do to transform this ugly duckling into a beauty? Well, someplace where it's nice, you know.
When was that? What time?
That was I think the latter part of 1964, the first part of 1947.
1947.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And with $1,000, that's all the money we had scraped up, to transform the dining room over there mm-hmm. into something that was can I say that? No. Couldn't be beautiful, but something that's pleasant, you know, a nice surrounding. Mm-hmm. And from that day on, we start building our business. Paul Coates wrote about us in his column, and then I think word of mouth plays a very important part in building this business of ours. Mm-hmm. And after that, business just started boom. And then Then I've talked about Willa Kim. Now, Willa designed the downstairs of the bar. Mm-hmm. And she did a beautiful job. Now, to this day, that the front of the building and the bar itself is ageless. And that's talking about 30-some years, 30 years now. The front of this building is still as timeless as it was 30 years ago. So the funny thing about this transformation that we had from eating to dining is that we were doing so much business that other Chinese people come from all over the United States just to see what this place, what makes it click, because our name was constantly in the paper, constantly in the magazine, constantly being given an award one way or the other. And in those days, it's still chop suey. We have people that came to work for us just for one day, just getting a job for one day, you know, just to come in and see what makes this place click. The next day they don't show up and they take a menu with them. But they don't really understand that it takes more than just the cook and the menu. It takes a lot of combination of a lot of things. You got to be creative. You have to have the personality and the personality that goes with it. The man who meets the people at the door. Nobly, in this case, is my brother Walter. And you have to have the warmth, and you have to be able to be on the same plane as your Caucasian people, you know. If you're a Chinese who can't communicate, I don't care how great of a chef you have, how great of a owner you are, if you can't communicate and talk with a Caucasian, you can't build up the business that we have had. And to this day, of course, you know, we have made many, many friends. And that sets us apart away from a lot of other people. Of course, being here that many years, you know, you get to know a lot of people. And that's about brings it up to today.
How did the menu vary from simply chop suey or something like that?
Oh. See, in the old days, it was just, you know, you go to a Chinese restaurant and you order number one, number two, number three. Well, we changed that. We gave it a name, and we served them hors d'oeuvre first, which was never done. Then the entree came. The hors d'oeuvre first was because they pushed the drinks, and that's where the money is. Food, you don't make much money. It's a drink that makes the money. Mm-hmm. But see, in the old days, the Chinese people are not that aware of drinks. They're not aware that hors d'oeuvres brings more drinks, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the changing of the concept of dining instead of eating, and we were the first to do it. Mm-hmm. So we were the very first Chinese restaurant that went into dining, mm-hmm. because the fact that we changed it from hors d'oeuvres first, then entree, rather than having everything come out at one time. Mm-hmm. And this is about the end of our story of our family in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Can I ask you also places where you've lived in LA? You were born in China, and where was the first place that you lived here in LA?
Well, the first place we lived is in Chinatown, called a street called Apple Plaza. And if I remember vaguely, there's a man named Apple Plaza that lived in the city of the Angel here back many, many, many years ago. Mm-hmm. And our restaurant was located in the next street over, which is Montesson. And then after Chinatown was relocated, we lived on Broadway. Mm-hmm. And after I was married, I lived in an apartment across the street. Then we moved into our first home that we built in El Sereno. Then I moved to Griffith Park.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still living at Griffith Park now.
Mm-hmm. How about your two daughters, did you say you have?
I have two daughters and one son.
One son. Are they in L.A. area?
Yes. My oldest daughter lived just about half a mile away from me. My second daughter still lives with me, and my son is now in UCLA. He's 21.
Do you speak Chinese with your children?
No.
Did you send them to Chinese school?
No,
you didn't.
I'm sorry now, I did.
So, can they understand?
They can understand. My two daughters can understand, but my son, vaguely, a little bit.
Mm-hmm. How about use of yek toy? Did your parents?
Yes.
Use yek toy.
Mm-hmm.
Did they believe mostly in Chinese medicine or Western medicine?
Certain things. Colds, flus, Chinese medicine. But on the other hand, I think our family was among the very first that went Western, because my mother had a miscarriage and she nearly died. And she was in the hospital for 3 months. And so we were exposed to a Western doctor back in the 30s. And in the old days, Chinese people don't go to see Western doctor until they're about to die. Mm-hmm. And after they die in the hospital, all the Chinese claim that when you go in the hospital, you die well, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only reason why, because you waited too long, you know. So we have great exposure to Western medicine, you know, at a very early year of our lives. So,
did your parents go to an herbalist here in Chinatown for colds?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember who he was?
Oh, there was a doctor called I don't remember his name.
Okay.
Too long.
Do you remember where it was?
It was in Chinatown,
somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
There was a couple.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you use yek toy? Did you use it with your children and for colds?
Not too much. If my mother was alive, you know, at the young age, we did. But by that time, you know, she wasn't too much on yek toy because, you know, during the war you couldn't get any. It's
mm-hmm.
all gone.
Mm-hmm.
Ran out.
Do you use yek toy in cooking?
Yes, a little bit. I don't do too much of that though. You know, you only use it in soup.
Mm-hmm. Did your parents use it in cooking?
My parents, no. We always ate out here at the restaurant. See, remember, after we get out of school, we come back to the restaurant where we work until 9 o'clock, and then we go home. The next day we go to school. We get off at 3, then we come back here and work, and then we go home at 9, and, you know, this is a daily thing.
All of you?
All of us.
And your mother was here in the restaurant, too?
My mother was here in the restaurant, too. So we didn't have any home life, you know. None to speak of.
Mm.
I never did learn how to cook until after I got married.
How about Saturdays and Sundays were here, too?
Oh, yes. You know, when other people had holiday, we only worked harder. Which consequently made me hating the restaurant business, too. But, you know, you got to a point at a certain age, if you didn't have a college education, become a profession, have a profession of some kind, you fall back to this business. This is the only business that I know until we open a travel business. So I've been at the travel business for 18 years.
Mm-hmm. How did you How did you come about to open the travel business?
Oh, my enterprising brother, David Lee, he opened all kinds of things, and I got stuck in there. Sometimes I feel like, well, he likes to open business, and now it more or less is rubbing off on me, and now I like to open business. So when we see the opportunity, that we feel that it's the right time.
Mm-hmm.
We're just enterprising. Of course, we're getting older too, you know. We can't do what we used to do when we were young. Mm-hmm. I'm glad we started the maintenance business we did 6 years ago. I couldn't do it today. Mm-hmm. Couldn't do it today. When we started the maintenance business, we worked as a family unit. We didn't hire anybody. My husband and myself and my three kids went out and worked the business with me. After I got off of work at the travel business, I'd go home and had dinner, and then the family went out and did the maintenance. My first account was at East West Federal Saving and Loan. Mm-hmm. They opened the year that we started our business. They were one of our first accounts.
Mm-hmm.
And then Cathay Bank, then Far East. Then we start picking up Auto Club of Southern California.
You opened your travel service in 1960?
1961 or something like that, about 18 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The business is the only thing that I know. I like it, I enjoy it. I don't think there's very few Chinese women who's in business, really. And it's a completely different outlook on life, you know, when you're in business than you are if you were a teacher or an educator or what.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you're exposed to a lot of things and quite interestingly, a lot of interesting people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I've got the best of the two worlds by, you know, starting in a restaurant business and ending up in a travel business, and I think these two businesses are most considered part of my life, which is most interesting. I mean, not my life is interesting, I think the type of business that I'm in, because you get to meet a lot of fine people.
Mm-hmm. Your associations, are they mostly with Chinese or non-Chinese?
The funny thing is, I think my association is mostly with non-Chinese.
Even in your travel service and in the restaurant, you're mostly associated with non-Chinese?
Mm-hmm.
Where do the Chinese people go to?
I don't know.
Because Chinese customers go to non-Chinese.
I don't know where. I think the one that speaks only Chinese go to other Chinese travel agent who speak only Chinese, or wherever they can get the discount travel, right?
Mm-hmm.
Since we are a legitimate agency licensed by the government, we can't have any discount business, so I don't do any of that. So consequently, I think that's where we don't have much business from the Chinese community, except perhaps for the second or third generation who speak English, you know. They can understand that, you know, you just pay whatever the price called for.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way they know that business operates.
Do you do any advertising in the Chinese community?
No.
Do you do any advertising in the non-Chinese?
My business and the travel business usually by the word of mouth.
Mm-hmm.